Hello and welcome to Politically Enraged, a podcast made for the lefties amongst us. Politically Enraged is a podcast about politics, both British and further afield, and a place to talk about society and how it needs to be improved for everyone. You can find us on Twitter at Political Rages, Instagram at Politically Enraged. You can sponsor the show on Ko-fi, or you can follow my personal socials. I'm Davey Moo, across all social media, and I'm here to talk to real people about real problems and work out how we move forward. Enjoy. The way that TikTok is with POC creators is absolutely insane. So I've been talking to a couple of my friends recently who were just like, yeah, I'm just burning through accounts because I say things that offend the TikTok gods, and it's always anti-racism stuff.
Yeah.
Whoa, I was exactly
the same. Yeah, that's what I meant about plugging in a set of earphones.
It like randomly turned itself up to full volume. I was like, we can't be having that. Welcome to Politically Enraged, the podcast designed for the lefties. And then I just introduce people and I normally let people introduce themselves because I'm socially awkward. I can't stand sitting there and like talking about someone while they're sat like. So yeah. You can introduce yourself if you'd like.
Okay. So hi everyone. I'm Darren Kampfer. I'm a anti-racist content creator based in South Africa. Started very recently, about a year ago. My background is in business and finance. So I tend to really get under the capitalist skin in between making the anti-racist content.
It's all really, like, I can't even remember how it was I came across you. I just remember, like, going through, I was just, like, as you do, like, swiping away. And as soon as you came up, it was like, it was one of those videos that starts with something really like impactful. And I was like, I like this guy. And then every time you come up, I'm like, yes, say more things.
I appreciate that. But yeah, it's been quite the journey creating this particular kind of content. It definitely is a baptism by fire kind of thing. And I think that it's always one thing to know and live and experience racism as a POC, but you really get a scope of the breadth and width of racism and just white supremacy in general when you make this kind of content, because now you're getting fed thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of opinions, and you realize that there's quite a bit of work to do.
I honestly can't imagine it. Like, and to my shame, I've said this quite a few times before, like, I was super ignorant about it all. I've never been what I would like to think. I've never been, like, an out-and-out, like, racist asshole, because I've just always, like, listened to racist people speak and been like, well, you're dumb. But there's a huge amount of privilege in the position that I was in before, which was just, like, complete unawareness of how systemic and bad it was, especially in the UK. Because, you know, we see, like, a lot of examples from America about how bad things are over there. And I was always like, oh, well, you know, we're not like that here. And then when everything kicked off with the proper BLM movement going like mainstream and all of the horrible things that were happening because of that, like, my friends were telling me all these stories they'd never told me before. And I was just like, holy shit, like, I had no idea it was like that. And it was just like this gut reaction. And then, but it was like, the big problem there is a lot of people had the gut reaction and then didn't start doing the stuff to unpick everything that's crammed into you as a little impressionable kid and as you're growing up. And that's where I think there's been a lot of problems, because people don't do the work to stop it. They just get upset by it and then go, oh, well.
It's actually quite interesting, because for like, I'm going to use a broad term, person of color, but like, for a person of color, you don't like grow up knowing what racism is. You grow up knowing this is your life. This is how you get treated. Like, these are the kind of struggles that you and your community go through, and that's what you know. So you don't know that the life you live is because of systemic issues. Like, you don't inherently just like know all of this. And so maybe, like, I haven't spoken about this online before, but maybe let me speak about it now. The way I started making this kind of content was, I was obviously a business student and then heavily involved in lecturing and helping small businesses start up. That was pretty much my passion, if you want to call it that. And nothing was working. All the government organizations that I had worked with were helping people start businesses, but most of them, for the most part, were failing. Private sector is always getting involved in helping people start businesses, but again, for the most part, all of those businesses are failing. And so most of the time, people chalk it up to, well, business is hard, business is difficult. They don't ever look at the systemic issues. They just speak about, well, no business ever makes it past 3 years. Hardly like 80% of businesses fail within this amount of time and X, Y, Z. And they speak about all these things, and it's an accepted norm of a capitalist society that most people don't make it, that most businesses don't make it. So I had done this kind of work in different forms and run small businesses for maybe from the time that I was 19, 20 until maybe about 3 years ago, probably like 2018. And the way this started was there was a really, really, really brutal rape and murder of a girl named Uyenene. Then I got involved in some NPO work. And then because of COVID, everything just kind of came to a grinding halt. And then closer to the end of last year, there was this one case where this real estate agent was being taken to court because the landlord had said that they want the tenant to be race specific. That was the term they used. They didn't want the tenant of any color other than a white tenant. And then people were shocked. People were like clutching their pearls and they were like, oh my goodness, yeah, yeah, yeah. And everybody was shocked, right? And I was like, oh, you, okay, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear. I was like, oh, you, yeah, like, absolutely. You all don't know. Okay. I was like, oh, you all don't know that this is a normal thing? You don't know that, like, you put down a family member's name whose name is more white sounding to get your lease approved? Like, this is a normal thing that POC do all the time because we just have to. Because if your name sounds too black or too Indian or too colored, for example, if that's a thing, then there's less likelihood that you'll get the property. So I started making content about this. Now, mind you, my background had been business all along, business and finance and investments and that kind of thing. So I was like, wait, man, let me actually take some time out and take the systemic approach and try and figure out what exactly the reason is for this. Because like, I'm no longer willing to accept that just so few businesses make it and so few people make it. Like, it's not working. I've just spent almost 10 years of my life in this bottomless pit of trying to help people start businesses or trying to start businesses myself and like showing people the ropes on how to get funding, how to get things registered. And I don't think anybody actually knows about this. I've never spoken about this online before. Anyway, so this is what I did for about almost 10 years and nothing was working. And I was working with people who had money and had the doorways open and all these kind of things. And it was like, okay, I could get in, but what about everybody else? And that just wasn't the case. Because I had grown up with a fair amount of privilege. So it was like, it was going to be easy for me to slip in the door, but this is going to be completely impossible for everybody else. And that's how this kind of content creation started. So it's like, okay, businesses can't start because of this reason. Let's look deeper. Let's look into the economic issues. Then it turned into home life and social issues. Then it turned into spatial planning and how things were set up in our city and our country. Then it went all the way back to apartheid and then eventually back to slavery and then eventually back to colonization. And you see that nothing has been done to fundamentally change the system in which we live.
Yeah.
Nothing. All that we've done is we've taken a system that is inherently oppressive and created to keep power in one place. And we've slapped on a sticker that says CO2 emissions reduced. Like that's pretty much what we've done. So like, and it's so frustrating because now I'm like, okay, it's fine. I've wasted 10 years on small businesses thinking that was the solution, which it absolutely is not. Like creating little capitalist parasites inside of capitalist systems is not going to change shit.
It's funny that you say wasted because if this is what it's led to and you're doing all of this really awesome stuff, I don't know if wasted's quite right. It's because I look at that with relationships where I'm always like, that guy was an asshole, but at least I learned what an asshole looks like. But I do get what you mean there.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's pretty much how I got to where I am now, realizing that systemic change is the only way that the masses are going to be better off. Everything else we're doing now is just creating windows. It's like you're trying to help somebody in through this narrow window in a house rather than building a bigger door because nobody wants to share what's inside.
Yep.
It's not gonna work. It's not gonna happen. And so it's so frustrating watching politicians all over the place talk about like growing business and creating jobs, and it's like, why? You don't pay people enough. You want to grow a business and then not pay people enough. You don't want to talk about the fact that inflation is man-made. we don't want to talk about the fact that when a good supply is in short production, you don't have to up the price. You do because you can. Like, we don't ever address these kind of really sick issues. It's like, what makes you think that if water is in short supply, you should hike the price?
That's the thing. It's like, I was really naive to it all a few years ago. And it was through this like weird confluence of everything that I've started picking apart everything in my own way. And I refused for a really long time to pick up any books about any kind of like governmental structure, whether it be it like I'm talking about capitalism, but I'm also talking about socialism and things like that. Because I wanted to untangle how I felt about it within, like, with it being part of the structure that's made me before I started letting other people point it out and label it. I wanted to see if I could unpick it a bit. And I think one thing that I've struggled with is a lot of people do seem to, everyone seems to go off what everyone else is saying. I don't see, because I know you do it because I've heard you do it, but very few people seem to read like an ist's book, like a socialist talking about socialism or a capitalist talking about how great capitalism is. I see them read it and I hear them talk about it, but I never see them pick apart those ideas and examine them critically. And that's what really bugs me. Because even if you see someone who agrees with 99% of the things that you say, that 1% is the bit that you should focus on, and you should unpick why you don't agree with that and what you could do better. And that's how we move forward. Whereas it seems like at the minute, the whole world over, everyone's rehashing the same ideas about how things should be, and that's why we keep propagating all of this failing capitalist crap that's not working for anyone.
And a big part of that is because we are indoctrinated to not pick things. We get taught from the time we go to school that you go to groupings that you have the most things in common with, that you are the most alike, because it's easy to, nothing short of, it's just easy to market to, it's easy to sell to. It's, people are of the opinion that like, people with similarities tend to flock together, but that's not entirely true. We tend to seek out diversity as often as possible. Like people who have a critical mindset tend to seek out new things, tend to seek out nuance, whereas people who are just taught to conform need uniformity because that's a comfort zone. And so it's, you can literally see when you ask somebody who's never had this like part of their brain tapped before, the cognitive dissonance and the fight to think critically, because it seems almost painful, because now everything in their life is going to be picked apart. And I think what tends to happen is people tend to latch onto politics the same way people latch onto religion, not by reading and inspecting and taking apart the book themselves, but by hearsay and then following with what they most agree with. And again, because we taught to see things that way at a like foundational level in how our education system works, we even taught scarcity at like 6 years old. You're taught to compete for a place in class. If you win, if you do this good at X, Y, and Z, you'll be rewarded with this prize and you'll get this that everybody else will not get. And so you are then taught at 5, 6 years old, the entitlement of working hard gets you something that other people don't get. And if they want it, they need to work harder.
Yep.
We literally drilling capitalism into kids from before they can read.
The weirdest thing about that as well for me, the education system itself, and this is definitely not just a UK thing, but it is obviously a direct experience for me.
Yep.
But we don't address the systemic failures of the education system that we all use and we all buy into. Like I've been really getting obsessed with reading about different ways that people learn, and I can't remember what the terms are, you know what I mean, but there's a lot of people who they cannot learn by sitting down and reading a book or talking about it. They physically have to like do it. They're like, someone stands over them and tells them it, and they can do it amazingly, and that's how they learn. But we have this one size fits all bullshit education system that's like, you must learn by listening to a teacher talk to you and then recycle what they say into an essay. And it's like, if you don't learn that way, you aren't gaining anything from education. And it's designed to fail, specifically because if everyone comes out of education like qualified in neurosurgery and being able to build rockets in their spare time, no one's going to do the menial jobs. But then we'll disparage all the people that do the menial jobs as well, which is just an extra layer of absolute bullshit.
And there's a phrase that one of our mutuals, Alicia, uses, and she speaks about manufactured scarcity. And the education system, the way it is shaped, is based on manufactured scarcity. It's based on being able to, or using a one-size-fits-all on everybody, because you only have a certain amount of time and you only have a certain amount of resources, when in reality, that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, we can't teach everybody the way they need to learn. We can't take longer with one child than we take with another child, because we don't have the time, because we don't have the resources. But we've created a system as such. We've created one way that will cost you money and it will take more from you. But in reality, that's not the case. And so I feel like the onset of white supremacy as a global issue has, as much as people see the advancement in technology, which I don't believe slavery was necessary for. You don't need to enslave somebody to advance technology. You need slavery to create that technology a billion times over more than people need, but you don't need them to create it. You don't need to enslave them to create it. But as much as we want to credit the last few years for technological advances, we've essentially finished off the planet and stifled ourselves, because we don't see innovation past profitability. Everything about our innovation is about getting more for less. Or I wonder what humanity would look like if we were free to just create.
I've wondered that too. It's interesting, isn't it? I think we restrict ourselves based on, like, what's my $1 million idea, instead of right. What can I do to make people's lives better? And it's such a shitty mindset, because why? It's one that I can't wrap my brain around, because don't get me wrong, like, you know, in a capitalist system, wouldn't it be great to be a billionaire? But, like, at the same time, it's not a good system. And mm-hmm. I don't understand how someone like Jeff Bezos could ever earn the amount of money that he earns, because no matter how much you do, you are still relying on other people who you then exploit, because they're not being paid as much, but you still make a ton of money. But even outside of that, if we actually looked at it and, like, just the world in the scope of, like, cool, so I'm alive and I need to do something to make the world better, what will that be? How much better would the world be, instead of all of this, like, I'm going to make everyone else's life miserable because I'm failing at capitalism? It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, like, I see capitalism like this. If we were all on an island and everything was growing on the island, we had a river on the island, there were enough trees to take, everybody would just take the resources that they needed and made use of it on the island. Now, if one guy decided to be a dick and he said that he was going to hoard all the fruit trees on a particular part of the island, and if you wanted those fruit trees from him, or the fruit from those trees, you would have to give him something in return, you would think he's the biggest asshole on the planet. But in this society, we reward that kind of behavior. And we teach it from a very young age. And so it's just, it's like, I had this conversation with my girlfriend, and she said some things you just have to write off as a loss for that particular generation. Like, they're not going to change. They're not interested. All they know is the system that they've been living in, and you're going to have to change it with the upcoming generation. And she was telling me this part specifically as well. She was like, I think you're gonna lose your mind if you don't just write certain things off. Because, like, trying to get a 50, 60-year-old man who's dedicated 30, 40 years of his life to a capitalist system and has now been rewarded for it, and you trying to tell him, hey, we want to split everything among everyone. Like, that level of entitlement and, like, ownership is so ingrained.
People are taught to fear it as well, though. They're taught that everyone's going to take advantage, so why not you? Like, because if we had everything equal, then there'd be that person that wouldn't be equal. And it's like, yeah, but why are you worrying about the outlier, the asshole? Why are you worrying about them? If loads of us all came together and said we can make an equitable system that works if we all work together, like, yes, there's going to be an asshole in there, in a huge, vast, giant, like, you know, multi-country society that wants to work on that. So what? It doesn't matter. There's no point in focusing on that aspect of it when you could focus on the we could potentially make the world a better place for everybody kind of part.
So that's true. Here's the catch, though. That needs to happen at a certain level of critical mass. Because if it happens before that, you have situations like Mali, you have situations like Zimbabwe, where it's like, oh, you wanna kick the system, we'll make an example out of you. So it has to be, and I wish, I mean, I'm glad for social media so that the conversation is happening by the millions, but like it's definitely going to have to reach a critical mass because the system and the people who perpetuate it have no issues enforcing it with violence. Absolutely none.
I genuinely think that that's one of the things that's happening right now. I don't know. Obviously, I do. I've got two other mates who live in South Africa, and they tell me a lot about what's going on over there, just like, you know, the daily things that are happening and things like that. But what I don't ever know is what your media is like on the daily. And the media over here at the minute is just literally scaremongering about everything all the time. Like, everything is like moral panic, and it's so exhausting because it's so transparently an attempt for them to not have the conversation about the fact that everything that they've been trying to propagate for like 300 400 years is failing, but people buy into it all the time, and you just want to be like, why are you listening to this? Why are you listening to people throwing this moral panic bullshit around about, like, one of the big things, if you like in particular want to look at it through the lens of like talking about racial disparity, was when we had BLM protests here, some people in my friend's town, Bristol, ripped a statue down and threw it in the river. And all of the discourse was around, was it morally right to pull down the statue of a slaver and throw it in the river? And not, why the fucking hell do we have statues of slavers up in the first place? Why is this a conversation? Like, this is an open and shut conversation of, it's public property. It should never have been up in the first place. It's taken down. Why are we having months and months and months of discourse about it?
I don't know what to say to that as a South African citizen. The amount of statues and memorials, there's literally something here in Cape Town called Rhodes Memorial, and it's named after Cecil John Rhodes, who, if he had his way, would have owned the entire Southern Africa. So no, it's definitely like, as a South African, there's so many monuments and memorials and stuff here that should just not be here anymore. And the fact that it's still up is wild.
It's crazy. It's just
ridiculous.
And then they spend so much effort like talking about, like, the weirdest, like the conversation that kept coming up was, all of you people are angry about a statue being pulled down and not the fact that this man caused 15,000 deaths in a year from putting people in chains and dragging them across the sea. And even if those people hadn't died, they would have been put into slavery. Like, are you fucking kidding me? And then it was all like we literally had some people, we have like some really shitty right wing, like newspapers and stuff like that over here. And I saw a couple of people being like, no one ever talks about the good stuff that he did, like opening schoolhouses. And it's like, because it's not like, you know, well, you know, he did shout at someone on the street once, but he donates to charity. It's like, there's some things that you cannot come back from. Like, you cannot balance the scale of what he did. So no, of course we're not talking about the good things that he did, because he was a fucking prick, like a devil, a hideous, horrible human being who should be like, alternately, have his statue torn down, and we should teach children about him and about what an asshole he is, so that kind of shit never happens again.
Yeah. So this is what I wanted to ask, like, as I'm not sure what your upbringing was, but I'm assuming being a white man in the UK, you grew up around a lot of white people. What's the attachment to these kinds of monuments and basically these kinds of people? Like, what's the attachment? Is it the idea that they had done some good for the world, and if we tarnish that reputation, it would paint the like European countries for what they are? What's the...
I think a lot of it's just pure ignorance, to be honest with you, because I don't think many people even knew who Colston was before that fucking statue got pulled down. It was just an unremarkable statue in the centre of Bristol. But the difference was when you realised, like, I mean, in fact, no, the difference wasn't when we realised. It was the fact that we'd been allowed to forget who he was. There was already petitions pending to pull it down, but the local council were just completely ignoring them. But the difference was, when you found out, what was your reaction? Was it like, it's just a statue? Or was it, why the fuck do we have that? What the fuck? Because there was an argument made that we should keep those things up to show, you know, that we have this colonial past and that we should deal with it. And it's like, glorifying a slaver is not how you fucking disassemble colonialism and come to terms with it. Like, you fucking face up to it. Like, the fact that our ancestors did some horrendous, disgusting things. And you talk about real terms, reparation, and how to humanize people to each other. That's how you deal with it. You don't keep statues of horrendous people up. Otherwise, what's stopping us from throwing up a quick statue of fucking Adolf Hitler in the center of London? Like, you know, why is this a difficult concept?
Yeah, perhaps when we get the chance to chat again, we can dig into just like that kind of upset around just the differences in taking down these monuments.
Honestly, it's needed. There's my friend does a podcast and she's got a really good episode that's literally all about statues, and it's about how typically a lot of like white asshole men throughout history will have these like big grandiose statues of themselves put up, and it just like honestly the idea of that makes me want to puke. Like, imagine being like, there's not enough statues of me around here. Like, the second that someone thinks that of themselves, you're like, you know what? Objectively, you must be a douche and I don't want anything to do with you.
I think, because I know we're running out of time, so I don't want to keep us too long. But yeah, there's definitely a bunch of conversations we need to have, because I think there also needs to be accountability from European citizen side, just in terms of like, hey, our quality of life is not the greatest right now, but like it's directly proportional to the oppression of the colonial oppression of other people. So what are we going to do to level things out? Are we going to dismantle the system entirely, or are we going to stay in a capitalist system? Because if so, then reparations are what you need to do. So like, one way or the other, we need to slice the pie. And so how, as humanity, do we make this work?
There's got to be ways. And that's the thing. That's the thing that gets so endlessly frustrating, is there are ways and means to fix these things. It's not an easy answer, and it might be uncomfortable, and it might be frustrating, and it might make people feel bad. But like, white people's feelings don't matter as much as actually making the world a better place. But the problem is, that's the concept that's still being propagated. Like, and I'm saying this as a white guy who benefits a shit ton from my white privilege. And you asked about my upbringing. Like, I grew up in a countryside town. The first time I ever met or went to school with a person of color, it was like my second year of high school. I ended up being in class with two twins who weren't white. And that was my first like prolonged exposure to someone who wasn't white. And it's just like, it's so weird because I see it so clearly, and I know that other people do, but they deny it. They deny it so readily because they know that if they accept it, then the next step is addressing it, and they don't want to.
So that's exactly the conversation here in South Africa, where white people say like, they don't want to keep hearing about apartheid. They don't want to keep hearing about what their parents did. And I was like, nobody felt so bad that they did anything about it. Nobody felt so bad that they chopped up the property their parents left them, or they dissolved the family business and split the money. Nobody felt bad enough to do anything significant about it. That's like those kind of things, like the people are going to feel bad. Like you say, it's inconsequential, because the goal here is accountability. The goal here is taking responsibility for what was done. And if there was no benefits to your whiteness, you should have nothing to give up, and therefore no reason to worry.
That's the problem.
So I think that's...
Everybody knows. And that's how you corner them. You say, if you don't benefit from this, then you wouldn't mind changing it. But you do benefit from it. And that's why you're scared, because you know. Or at least the thing is, that's the other thing as well. It's not that they know that things have to change and their lives will get worse. It's that they know that things will change and other people's lives will get better. And that's the thing. That's where I don't understand it. Because I'm like, nobody's saying like, white people, your lives have to get worse. It's like, we have to make people who've been systemically oppressed for a really long time, we have to uplift them and make their lives better. At what point, where does that mean that your life gets worse?
In a capitalist system, people find success in subjugation. People find success in having people under them, having excess. If you have multiple cars, if you have a house that's bigger than you need, if you don't have to clean your own house and somebody else can clean it for you, if you go to a restaurant and you can order everything off the menu or shut down the restaurant for yourself, now you are successful. So that kind of conversation is tricky to say the least.
Yeah,
because people don't have a view of success outside of capitalism, and that goes across racial lines.
I have a very
volatile, violent gag reflex to black capitalism. Like, I can't stand it. Like, I genuinely hate it with a passion, because it's like, you know what this does to other people, and you are now choosing to do it. It's wild.
I think a lot of people, a disturbing amount of people, because I know I've spoken to you about this on like comments and stuff, a disturbing amount of people who suffer from oppression in one way or another are desperate to sometimes capitalize on that, on a different form of like supremacy in a different way. Because I'm pretty frank about like some of the things that I see in my community as a gay person, and it usually is very much usually the white cis gay guys who do stuff. And like, I look at it and I'm like, what are you doing with your life? Why have you done that? Why have you said that? But it's very much a like, well, you know, if it was affecting me, I wouldn't, but it's a way for me to make things better for myself. Like, at least it's like, it's all one of those, like, at least I get to say or do this. And it's like, ooh, that kind of mindset is grim.
Yeah. I think this was like a good start to the conversation. I'm definitely keen to have a few more, if you are up for it.
Absolutely, yeah. I've been wanting to get you on this podcast for ages, so as soon as you said yes, I was like, yeah.
Okay, yeah, we can definitely like plan it out. We can look at a few topics specifically, because clearly now we know we click and we can ramble on forever.
I had no doubt whatsoever, mostly because like this doesn't even stop when I'm asleep. Apparently I was talking in my sleep the other night. it's like, shut up.
Now we know. yeah, because I think my connection is getting significantly worse. So I think we should give it a rest at this point.
You gotta love the internet. Yeah. But yeah, no, that's fine. You just let me know. You've got an open invite, so.
Okay, definitely. We can make it the thing.
Cool. Thanks as always for joining us here on Politically Enraged, the Lefties Refuge. If you do want to follow me on social media so we can chat about the episodes and future upcoming information, you can follow me on Twitter, either at Political Rages or Davy Moo. You can follow me on Instagram at Politically Enraged or Davy Moo. And you can follow me on TikTok at Davy Moo. If you do want to sponsor the show on Ko-fi, you can just search Politically Enraged on Ko-fi. Join me again soon for another episode of Politically Enraged. And remember, get politically engaged and stay politically enraged.